Settle down. So, hi everyone. Thank you for being here and thank you for having me. So my name is João Cabral. And this is the talk. It's like teaching out, well, you probably knew it. So it's about teaching out control and learning playfulness because I'm a teacher back in Portugal, as I'll mention in a sec. And I teach two classes on alternative controllers. And this talk is a bit about what we're doing and the results we've had, what's been happening in Portugal, and some insights about the whole thing, because I honestly at the time I still kind of don't have a clue what I'm doing, so we're kind of learning. It's a learning experience for me as well. So like I said, my name is João Cabral. I come from Portugal, Lisbon. I like to put LEDs on stuff, basically, in my personal time and my freelance work. I work partly as a freelance artist, digital artist. I come from a computer science background, but I'm kind of sick of computers, so I take every chance I can get to get my arts and crafts done. I was a coder and a game designer for a while in a video games indie studio company called Nerd Monkeys. That didn't go very well, as you can imagine. And for the last 5-6 years, I've been lecturing at Lusófona University in Lisbon. And it's really funny how I got there, because basically what happened was that I met Philippe Louge. He's the director of the video games course. We met at the Global Game Jam a few years ago. And I have kids, I have twins. At the time, they were like 3. And I was like, all right, I'll go to a game jam. And I went to Lusófona because a friend of mine is also teaching there, a friend of mine from the industry. And I was tired, because I had twins, like I said. They were 3 years old at the time. And so I didn't want to code, so I brought all my electronic junk, LEDs and buttons and all that kind of crap. And Philippe was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to participate this year because I just came from a conference from abroad, my family. But he didn't resist. And he ended up teaming up with me and with my friend. And we did like this crazy, so he brought his Vespa motorbike into the classroom, and we did an escape room kind of game where you had to open up the lids of the bike or solve some puzzle game on the brake handles and things like that. So it was a nice introduction, and after that Philippe invited me to teach alternative controllers. And so I'd really like to point out that what we're doing back home in Portugal is really comes from the vision of Philippe's vision that something like alternative controllers is actually useful in a game development course, which I kind of feel like it does, because it's the video games industry is very packed, very has a lot of people wanting to do games and a lot of games selling, and so it's hard to make yourself noticeable. And using this alternative controller, since it's a niche, you can really kind of do your thing and be a bit more visible. As you can imagine, we started out, so I have no background in teaching, and I actually don't have much background in electronics and stuff. At the time I did some things at a personal level, but I'm not like, I came from a computer science, purely software type of course. So as you can imagine, we started out with cardboard arts and crafts mostly. Then we got to the point where, well, it was nice, but students were spending a lot of time doing the cardboard and not doing the actual games, because you want to put buttons and sensors, but then you need to put them somewhere. So we started by cardboard, and it was really a lot of effort and a lot big time consuming. And so we had the idea of going to Lusófona's junkyard dumpster diving. Yeah, so this is within the university, as any big corporation, I guess. It's a private university, but as any big thing, it has a big dumpster. So we started dumpster diving, and we started adapting rubbish, basically. So this is like an IKEA grater that was thrown away, and someone picked it up, and some of my students made a fishing game out of it. Yeah, but we eventually we kind of realized that what provided the best games and the best interfaces for games was actually discarded devices that we found. So we did a whole semester just based on old telephones. So we hacked them. We opened them up, put an Arduino inside, go get the keypads and go get the lifting and putting down the receiver, and then we hacked the tiny the speaker on the phone. Well, the microphone as well, but it's a bit more difficult to use. And yeah, we did a whole semester about just using 5 or 6 of these telephones. There was actually a very cool game in which you used a real, it was a detective murder mystery game, and you used a real phone book. So you'd go to the phone, like you would get an audio saying, oh yes, you have to call the jewelry store, called whatever, and you had to go to the phone book, find the jewelry store, find the number, type in the number, and then you'd receive the next audio to progress in the storyline. So, awesome. Yeah, so that came through the suggestion of that were the students making a game, and then you kind of, it's cool because I get to learn through what the students make, and it has been like this progression of, all right, I'm teaching about this, but actually I'm also finding cool ideas and cool stuff about what we're making, so it's really fun. So what we currently are doing, so the problem was that when we were dumpster diving, it really depended on the season. So if they were, if at the university they were dismantling this weird electronics room or some biomedical room, we had a lot of good stuff to work with. But sometimes you went there and there just wasn't enough things useful to make games. And since we wanted discarded devices, what we're doing now is actually you go to Lusofna, to Lisbon's biggest flea market. It's called the Thieves Market, actually. It's very dear to my heart because that's where I went as a child to buy N64 secondhand games. So I really like it a lot. And so we take students there. Each student takes €5 in their pocket, yes? And we get there and they're looking out for junk and for junk and interactable devices, yes? So we find a lot of secondhand stuff. Many of them have buttons and they have interactability on them, so that's what we're going for. We find some purely mechanical stuff and they're really hard to hack, but some students are really drawn to that kind of stuff. We find, obviously, the junk. I'm sure you'll find here and a bit of everywhere as well. Some things are like really, really weird. You can't really tell what they are, but they're interesting. And we find some things which are just like too expensive. Although like they're really. So this is a fan, alarm clock, radio, and light all at the same time. But they were asking for like. This was really expensive, so just we didn't bring it. Sorry? Yeah, it's in the next version. Alright, so this is... So I go to the students, they take €5, they take photographs of stuff, they gang up to buy things, yeah, because things are usually more than €5. They group up, they buy the things, and we bring it back to class. And this is how the class looks like. So my class is actually done in the first 2 weeks of the semester, when no other classes are going on. So that's really good because the students are really focused on my thing, and also we can make the rooms a mess and leave them a mess and just clean up at the end, because that was also like a big thing. Always having to clean up at the end of each class was really, really time consuming. And so it's a 2-week class, and during the first week, basically we're just taking objects apart and finding out what they are and what we have inside. And this is a really challenging week for me because you really honestly don't know what you're going to find. Well, in some cases you do, but you don't know what's on the inside, and sometimes things don't work as you thought they would, and so. You really have to adapt and adjust to the objects that the students got. And so this first week is really challenging because we're figuring the objects out. We're like, okay, how can we make a video? Actually, you know what alternative controllers, I mean, anything you look at in this festival is an alternative controller. So I think, all right, and yeah. Yeah, so first week we're just taking the objects apart, figuring out what to do with them. And my job is to suggest and to tell students, all right, maybe this will be easier, this won't be as easier. Because I'm also, during this first week, I'm introducing them to electronics and Arduinos and digital electronics, because they don't know any of this stuff before these 2 weeks. So this is like the introductory class to Arduinos, electronics, and physical computing. Yeah, it's also important to have a box of electronical components because what students can do with the objects and what kind of games they can make really depends on what you have available. We just have the basic stuff. It's really fun because once in a while you'll find a new part and it's like, all right, this is really good to make this kind of stuff, and now we buy a bunch of it. So just basic electronics, color sensors, distance sensors, light sensors, buttons, knobs, toggles, just the basic things. Especially because they're students and they're gonna break some stuff. But I usually tell them that if we have smoke, like that student will get an extra grade because it means they're trying and they're messing with it. Yeah, they're not afraid of experimenting. I teach them how to solder, obviously, because that's an important part. It's really fun, because they're not really expecting it. It's a video games development course, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. And they start to integrate electronics into the devices, right? So they have to hack the objects themselves. I really help out a lot in this first week. But the idea is that they have to think about what they want to do with the objects in order to hack them. Because I always give this example, if you have a toaster, and if you're hacking a toaster to make a game out of it, you need to know what kind of sensor you need, right? You might want to put several types of bread in, so you need a bread detector of some sorts, all right? So maybe each slice can be of different breads, can be of different colors, and we'll use a color sensor for that, or maybe not, use something else. Maybe the toast themselves have LEDs because you want to show if it's burnt or not. So it really depends on what type of game. So how you hack the objects depends on what game you're building. So the first week is about what they're doing and figuring the thing out. And come up with solutions for when they choose objects that actually aren't very good. So this is a tough one, like a shot roulette. Anything that's moving around, rotating is really, really hard. But they found it out. And by the end of the first week, I always ask for a game design document of some sort. Never mind the picture. This is not the document. Because it's nice to have students think through what they want to make and have that on paper, because then at the end, when they turn up with something completely different, we can go like, okay, what happened from there? Like, how did this process happen? It's nice for them to put on paper because then they have a guide. When they forget what they're doing, they can always go back to the document and kind of remember. All right, and then in the second week, I'm kind of on holiday. I'm not really on holiday, but then it's up to them. So at the end of the first week, we have a device. We should have a device with a USB out and possibly an audio jack. And they usually, since they use Unity mainly on the course for development, we connect the devices through USB to the computer. And then I suggested them to develop the game in Unity, not purely on the microcontroller. Some do, but it's up to them to figure it out, yes? Because that way they can use whatever environment they want and make the games. In the second week it's more chill for me. Not for the students, obviously. But for me, I can kind of just go around and see if everything's going okay, if they have problems. They'll always have problems with electronics. That's one of the key takeaways from this talk. You'll see in a sec. Let me just check on time, because... All right, we're good, I think. And by the end of the second week, they should deliver a weird game. Yeah, that's how we do it. Yeah, and this 2 week, the fact that they're not taking any more classes is really helpful in this, because they're really just focused on this and doing this thing alone, and really makes them more. Yeah, they have more dedication to it. All right, and I have some examples of some games that were developed by some international students. So I do this class not only for national BA, but also for the international masters. So these are students from all over the world that do this, that develop these games with, yeah, in my classes. Yeah, right. I play some. I think it's three of them. Then they're going to explain the game, and also I'm going to skip that part. All right, Echo Terminator 2000. Yeah, and I have one more, I think. Yeah, Monster Briefcase. And I'd like to give a shout out to these guys. Oh no, it's for them. For them. I'd like to give out a shout out to these guys, because they, all of them, like these international master students, they really took the thing to a whole different level, because their games are really good. And actually, we. Hey, sorry. I did that. All right, I'll just tell it. So we did an alternative. Some of these games you saw, the one in the mannequin head, it was accepted to GDC, so they were showing off at GDC. Although since I've been here for the last 2 days, it's the first time at EMF, I think this would be a more suitable place to show some of those things. So hopefully something will come out of that. All right, so I still have So that's what we're doing, and I have some insight I've come across while teaching that I think might be interesting. I don't know if any of you is at teaching or is teaching related. Yeah, all right. Anyone else? All right. So this, I don't know if your teaching is related to this kind of stuff or not, but well, hopefully something's useful out of this. All right. So the first. And I think the main insight I've got, so I don't come from a video, I come from a video games background, kind of, but not from alternative controllers background. And I'm not a researcher of any kind, so these insights are just that, they're insights that I've had over the last years while teaching because of the things that happen in the way. So I think the main biggest or one of the biggest insights or more interesting one is about how we play games. So in traditional video games, this is my kids actually, but in traditional video games, the way you play doesn't really matter for the game. So the playing the game, the physical actions you take while playing of using a controller, it should be transparent. If it's well done, when it doesn't get in the way, because we humans have this amazing capacity of expanding our body. So when you're using a hammer to hammer a nail, that's what I say. The hammer becomes part of your body as well. You get that while driving, like the car is part of you, and that's kind of what happens in traditional video games. So the controls should not get in the way, and you should be able to transmit your brain directly into the screen and what's happening on the screen. But with alternative controllers, actually the way you play really matters for the experience. Yeah, like how you play the game is very important. It's directly correlated to what's your experience and experiencing the game itself. And so on one hand, you have how you play the game doesn't really matter, it should not get in the way. Then you have alternative controllers where how you play the game matters for the game and is part of the game. But then you have a whole different set of games in which how you play is the actual game. There's no distinction between how you play and the game itself. And you've all played it. Everyone's played them. Anyone has any? No? Huh? Sorry? Not so much sports. Yeah, sports, kind of like hide and seek and traditional child's games. Because if you think about like hide and seek or playing tag, like how do you play hide and seek? You go and hide and other people seek. How do you play tag? You run around and you touch people. So by describing the game, you're also describing the actions and what you have to do to play the game. So I find that in this idea. Traditional video games and playground games are kind of in opposite spectrums, and alternative controllers is somewhere in the middle. Other than that, I think in terms of game design, it's really important to keep, like, push students towards keeping it simple, because things get really complicated really fast. And so even the smallest, most simple electronics will often break. So it's really important to push them into making very simple interactions and very simple things. We have to be a bit careful while choosing the objects. Like some students, these were really hardworking students, but they decided to make a game within a flash of a camera, photography camera, and it was just really small, so tiny. Everything got packed up and everything was disconnecting all the time. So it's it's really unfortunate, and it's about choosing the objects, but they took a gamble, it was all right. Also, like design to your strengths, so this game was also for the masters, and the team didn't really have developers or didn't have people with a lot of knowledge in coding, and so they did this really, really simple game, and they focused more on the art part and on the electronics and how to present the things that they were doing. So they used these buttons, so it's kind of ninja, where you have to tap other people's hands, I think. Yeah, but they did the electronic version of Ninja, where you had buttons, light switches on your hands, and you had to hit the other people, yeah. And this is a really good example of the team, of designing to the strengths of the team that they had. So I think that's also a good insight. I try to push students not to use screens, because if they have a screen in their game, then they'll have to do all this work to make things to put on the screen. And so usually I just push them out of screens and try, and that kind of, the object itself kind of loses some focus. And so usually I try to push them into making a no screen game and having feedback through audio or through LEDs or through whatever it is. Oh, 5 minutes flight, sorry. But I'm easily convinced, right? So if they tell me, no, we really need a screen, like we really need this or otherwise it won't work, if they convince me, it's good, but I'm easily convinced. Especially because I let them fall on their own traps, so they're gonna say that they really need to have this really complex thing, and I don't think you should, but they'll go, no, yes, we will, all right, you do it then. But then, well. But I think it's important because they feel responsible, I feel, for what they're making. So if it goes badly, it's on them. They decided to actually do something really complex. So they have a good learning experience, yeah? Be wary about the set and setting. So you need to, not only is your device the game, but the table around the device or whatever is physically around the device is also part of the game, because that's where you get some immersion. Usually they don't think a lot about that, but that's a really important part of it. And also thinking about the performative side of the thing. So maybe, some games end up being really performative, and that's also a dimension of these types of games, because you might have someone hosting the game or helping the game out. So this is, I didn't show the video, but this was a Master Galgabin. Well, it was like a space intergalactic cooking show. So like you humans got abducted and you're in this intergalactic cooking show, and that's the dish you had to cook at the end. It's really fun. Something that's also important is about the grading thing. So students are always very worried about the grading stuff, and I think some of the decisions we've made kind of help out. And so basically first, I think mentioning that these are all just prototypes and proofs of concepts really helps, because in 2 weeks you're not going to get a very polished thing by the end. And so I think that takes the stress out of actually having to build something really complex. Also that the time they are away from keyboard and actually just painting. Like this is the dollhouse from before, so this is the inside of the dollhouse. They turned it into a murder mystery game, and they spent a long time painting the thing. And so getting across that is also work, and that is also meaningful, is important, because then they don't think they're wasting their time if they're not developing stuff directly. Also that it's okay to fake it. So sometimes you want to do this really complex thing, or maybe it's not complex, but you just don't have the electronics for it. And it's okay to fake. Like if for the user, it's the same experience. You can have just someone sitting back on the keyboard, and when they do this, you press a button. When they do that, they press the other button. It's okay, because for the user, it's the exact same experience. So it's fine. Yes, the electronics sometimes doesn't work, and that's part of the learning experience. I don't demand that the games are good by the end, so they might have delivered a really lousy game, but maybe they work really hard because they tried this, didn't work, they tried that, didn't work, and then they end up with a really horrible thing. But they'll have a good grade, and I make sure that that's part of the grading system. Like if you work hard and you try different things, you're gonna get a good grade. Also, the deliverables are really important, I think. So we force them to deliver an itch.io page, and also to do a trailer like the ones you saw. So we make them do not a presentation video, but a trailer for the thing. And I feel that really makes a distinction, because you saw that those trailers are really good, and and then by the end of it, like you can't, some games you can't keep the objects. So the trailer and this page that they make is actually what ends up the proof that they were there working. And so it's really important to register stuff, and that's part of the evaluation of grading as well. Yeah, so I just only have 1 minute. But yeah, tech breaks easily. We can do a lot with just the small stuff. Physical world is really cool because we have physical bodies since we were born, so you have a lot more interaction in the physical world than you have in the digital environment. And also, I really feel that these types of games are actual augmented reality, because looking at reality through a screen is not augmenting reality in any way. But these types of games actually embed technology into the physical world, and I think that's a more honest augmented reality. Really important bits. We're repurposing junk, yes, which is cool. We're doing low-tech games, so everyone's moving on to AI and ultra-realistic graphics. And reality is out there. You can just go outside and you'll find it. So you don't really have to do all this really complex stuff. And that also ties to an ecological theme, which is important because, yeah, computers waste a lot of energy. And everyone has a really good time, and I think that's the most important bit. I would like to add that the students really relate, and I hope it's a favorite class because they really get to experiment and try different things. I actually wanted that's the end of the talk, but I wanted to just make another point because I'm for the first time here at EMF, and this is like the perfect playing ground to show this kind of stuff. So I'm hoping I can go back. So I came with, the university gave me some money to come. So I'm kind of like the ambassador, I guess. So I'm really hoping that we'll have Lisbon village somewhere or something like that. Because I think this would be, if the students knew they would have the opportunity to come here and show their games, I think they would work really hard for it. And so thank you all for having me, and thank you all for being here.